I have a friend whose name is Danny, and every year Danny texts me on Ash Wednesday that he got his ashes. Now, Danny lets me know this mainly because Danny is a Protestant. We go back many years. I think we met when we were either 12 or 13 years old. And so I've known him for a long time, and he's very strong in his Protestant faith, posts a lot of good Christian content on social media. And Danny always lets me know that he goes to Mass on Ash Wednesday. Now, it's the only Catholic Mass Danny attends all year round. But why is that? Why is it that so many people attend Mass on Ash Wednesday? A Catholic stat for you is that Ash Wednesday is the second most attended Mass typically of the year. Christmas is number one, Ash Wednesday number two, Easter is actually number three, and then you have some of the other, you know, popular days. But Christmas and then Ash Wednesday. Another interesting fact for you is that Ash Wednesday is not a holy day of obligation. So as you know, if you're Catholic, in the Catholic Church, we have several holy days of obligation. These are days like Christmas, January 1st, the Feast of Mary, Mother of God. We have August 15th, the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. December 8th, the Immaculate Conception. November 1st, All Saints Day. So there's a number of different days where we are obliged, same as we are on Sundays, to attend Mass. Ash Wednesday is not one of those days. However, at Masses across the country or at churches across the country, you will see the parishes full on Ash Wednesday. People know and parishes know. I think we plan pretty poorly given that fact that we know we're going to have a ton of people who have been away from the church for a while coming to Mass on Ash Wednesday. I don't think a lot of parishes have a really good plan for how they're going to handle that. What are they going to do? What is the message geared towards? And how are they going to help these people or influence these people to come back and not just be there one day out of the year? It's a challenge that a lot of parishes face. I don't think many of them make a good plan for it, and therefore we often let this opportunity come and pass us by. Now, I think one of the main things about that is this reality that people understand that they're going to die, right? Ash Wednesday, we kind of make fun of it. We have our jokes as Catholics, right? That we like to say memento mori, saints and religious sisters and priests. Many Catholics around the world throughout the ages have kept skulls on their desk to remind themselves that they will die. We like to remember death probably more than anybody else. Catholics are known for having crucifixes in their churches rather than empty crosses that you find in a lot of Protestant churches. And so we are known for being dark, if you will, right? We have bones of saints and pieces of their hair and things like that in our altars. And so we do these kind of weird kind of Halloween spooky things and remember death more frequently than a lot of times our Protestant brothers and sisters do. I think part of that is believing in faith and works as part of our justification, and not just believing that because we were baptized, we're automatically saved, even though you have a lot of Catholics who wrongly believe that because they were baptized, they believe in God, they generally try to be a quote-unquote good person, they're going to be saved, they're going to go to heaven, all is well, nothing to worry about. Now, this is mistaken, and this is incorrect. There are things we need to do. We have to continue to be faithful to Jesus Christ as he commands us to in the scriptures, telling us multiple times that we will know and people will know that we love God if we follow his commandments, if we follow Christ's commandments for our lives, of which way there were many, and they were very challenging, very bold and difficult, and very counterintuitive to the way that most of us live. And so we know that. And I think that there's something to remembering that we're going to die. There's something to Ash Wednesday that reminds us of this. Obviously, with receiving your ashes, you are dust, and to dust you shall return. It's powerful, it's moving, it's important, and people know that. The other reason, of course, you know, that's obviously a more light and optimistic reading of why people come to Mass on Ash Wednesday. The other reason, of course, is pride. People love being Catholic and saying that they're Catholic on Ash Wednesday. It's the only day that you can really visibly say that you're Catholic. So you have a lot of priesters or fallen away Catholics that come back to get the ashes so that they can wear them around and feel better about themselves, despite the fact that they're living very far outside the church in their day-to-day lives. Now, it's good that people come back. We shouldn't be judgmental towards them. We can't judge people's hearts. We can pray and hope that the people who come back in that manner for Ash Wednesday Mass this year actually have a conversion of heart and are drawn back to the Lord throughout this Lenten season. But I want to talk to you today about Lent. I want to talk to you about the most important thing we can do this Lent. I want to talk to you about other suggestions for your Lent. So I'm going to talk about the three most important things I think that you can do this Lent. But first is just what I think is the most important. So a lot of times, obviously, I know I used to work at Dynamic Catholic. You probably know this about me. And at Dynamic Catholic, they used to always say, don't give up chocolate this Lent. do Best Lent Ever. And Best Lent Ever can be a great program. I was blessed to do one of the videos for it a few years ago, actually. And I think they have some great content. Obviously, there's other things you can do for Lent. The CFRs with Blessed Is She have a great Lenten journal that you can do. If you're a local supporter for Seeking Excellence, you can join us for Introduction to the Devout Life by St. Francis de Sales. I'm going to be reading this book with my local supporters. Everybody's getting a free copy of it, and they will be able to follow along. And we're going to be doing videos, breaking it down even further and applying it to our everyday life. And it is a beautiful, wonderful book. And we'll talk a little bit about more about that at the end. But if you want to join and get a free copy of the book, seekingexcellence.locals.com, you can join as low as $10 a month. And you can join us for Introduction to the Devout Life. But I want to talk about something that is central to our faith, the most underestimated thing that we have in the Christian life, something that no matter how much it seems we have studied the Christian life or have tried to live it on our own, we underestimate the importance of this one thing. And this has been something that's been central to me. I've been reminded of many times as I've been reading this here book, The Soul of the Apostolate. I realize now that I'm mirrored, so you can't read it perfectly, but The Soul of the Apostolate. It's one of the most amazing Catholic books of all time, written by a priest many years ago. And yeah, just basically talking about that the interior life, the life within you, is the most important aspect of the Christian life. There is nothing more important than your prayer life. One of the famous quotes, or one of my favorite quotes from the book, is we can't leave the God of works for the works of God. Let me say that again, because I'm, I don't know. Dyslexic or something. I can't even read my own mind. We can't leave the God of works for the works of God. So what does this mean? There are many people in the world who are committed to doing good works, and that is a great thing. I think it's a great thing to be doing good works, to be volunteering for the church, to be involved in the church. All these types of things are super important, right? We recognize that. We realize that it's important for us to be volunteering, to be serving the poor, etc. But what we have to keep in mind is that none of it matters. We learned this in 1 Corinthians 13, right? Right? It is 13. Yeah. In the reading that you always hear at weddings, you know, basically St. Paul's explanation of love. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not boast. It does not envy, etc. Before that, he talks about, if I preach all these words, if I do all these good things, if I work miracles, but I don't have love, I'm but a sounding gong or a clashing cymbal. Basically, I am nothing, right? Nothing I do really matters if I don't have love. How we develop and cultivate love in our lives is through a life of prayer. This I've always believed, and this is something, shout out to Dynamic Catholic again, that Matthew Kelly really drilled home in one of his books for me, that said, if you want to immediately know what somebody's spiritual health is like, and if you want to know for yourself, what is your spiritual health like? And this is a great question to ask. Don't you want to know, if we're going into one of the most spiritually refining and important seasons of the year, you should want to know where your spiritual health is at. The best way to ask that is with one question: how is your prayer life? If your prayer life is poor, your spiritual life is poor. There's no amount of doing good things, of loving other people, of loving your family, that can replace the prayer life that you are meant to have. Now, St. Francis de Sales, in the Introduction to the Devout Life, actually talks about this. He has a really great quote in the very beginning of the book. So this is part one, chapter one, where he's going to talk about how many people seem like they are holy, but they're actually not. He says, such men may pass for devout, but they are not really so. And so he talks about how we tend to paint God in our own likeness, right? Instead of being made in the image and likeness of God, obviously we were born and made and crafted in the image and likeness of God, but then we're supposed to continue to be made into the image and likeness of God. What we often want to do instead is make God in our image and likeness. And so what this often looks like, he says, everyone colors his devotion according to his tastes and inclinations. One is given to fasting, and whilst he fasts, he holds himself to be devout, although his heart is full of bitterness. And whilst he will not touch his lips with wine, nor even with water for abstinence sake, he scruples not to sully them with his neighbor's blood and slander and calumny. Another would fain be devout because he daily repeats many prayers, although at the same time he gives way to angry, proud, and injurious language amongst his servants and associates. So you can kind of get this, right? People are hypocrites. And not only are people hypocrites in the kind of general sense, is all Christians are hypocrites, because we're all going to be hypocrites in a sense, because none of us can be perfect. And if you preach the gospel, you're preaching perfection, because we're called to be holy, we're called to be perfect as our Heavenly Father is perfect. And that's what we call people to as evangelists. You're never going to be able to do that. So at a certain degree, you're always going to be a hypocrite. But this is the worst kind of hypocrite that St. Francis de Sales is discussing, where he's saying somebody who is outwardly appearing very devout and holy, but inwardly holds hate in their heart. Inwardly, or behind closed doors, they gossip, they lie, they cheat, they steal from others. They're very harsh towards their servants, their coworkers, their employees, their loved ones, right? The people entrusted to them. They treat them very poorly, even though on the outside they seem very devout. I pointed this out many times when I was in college. I thought you had a lot of people who seemed to hide behind daily mass, is what I called it. People would hide behind going to daily mass on a regular basis, sometimes even every day, but ask them to pray for 10 minutes by themselves, sit in quiet, they wouldn't be able to do it. If you are unable to do that, you are spiritually unhealthy. Simple as that. It doesn't matter what else you do. It doesn't matter how much you volunteer. There's plenty of people, oh my goodness, in churches across America that are on staff at parishes, that volunteer heavily at parishes, the church ladies that are always there and always make their little, maybe like small bedtime prayers, praying for their family and loved ones in whatever way that they do, but don't ever actually sit and spend time with the Lord. Don't ever actually ask God, what do you want from me in my life? How can you refine me to be holier, to be more like you? Actually surrendering your heart and your will to God through prayer is the most important thing you can do. And so if you are spiritually unhealthy, if you heard me ask that question earlier, that the number one way to figure out what your spiritual health is like is that question, how is your prayer life? And you said, oh crap, my prayer life sucks. Then that is what you should focus on this Lent. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You need not give up coffee. You need not give up chocolate. You may do those things in addition to working on your prayer life, but focusing on your prayer life should first and foremost be what you do and what you focus on this Lenten season. A great place to start is just trying to pray for 15 minutes a day. This prayer can take different forms. Maybe one day you pray the rosary, another day the Divine Mercy Chaplet, another day you spend time reading scripture. And I think you have to understand, if you're bad at praying, if you've never prayed before, if you've never cultivated your prayer life, you are going to be bad at it. It's going to be difficult. It's not going to be easy. And that's part of the game. Anything you do in life that's worth doing, it's going to take time to master, right? You're not going to be St. Francis de Sales, St. Catherine of Siena, levitating and being, you know, thrust in the revelation from God, you know, right away out of the gate. It's not how it works. Nothing works that way. And so you have to give it time, but you can't focus on it too much. I've had just been really, really re-engaging, prioritizing my prayer life. Most importantly, praying in the church. So I live right next to a church and been praying in there much more frequently, and it's changed my life already. I mean, my resilience to adversity, my ability to be patient and be more loving towards my family and friends and everything else has been so much better, and it's made my content so much better, and it's just given me a new zeal and a new love for sainthood. And I want to be sainthood. I want to be a saint. I want to be holy. I want to be excellent. I want to be amazing. And I just have a new fire that's been lit within me since I've been doing that, since I've been spending time with the source of fire himself, which is Jesus Christ present in the tabernacle. Now, many of us can't get to a tabernacle every day, and that's okay. But reading good books like this, like The Soul of the Apostolate, like An Introduction to a Devout Life, like The Imitation of Christ, like The Screwtape Letters, you name it, it's going to be super helpful. So that's another good thing to do, is read a book like that. Imitation of Christ or Intro to the Devout Life are great examples because they have short chapters. You can read it and then you can just think about it. You can pray about it. You can talk to God about it and how you should apply it to your life. So that's number one. First and foremost, focus on your prayer life. Don't do something stupid this Lent. Become a man or woman of prayer as the most important thing you can do. There's nothing that will change your life more than actually developing a prayer life. It is the number one determining factor of your spiritual health and of, you know, how well you're going to be able to walk this Christian life. I remember reflecting the other day, we talked about confession during RCIA, and I asked Father, I was like, hey, do you think, at what point is not praying a sin? And he said that there's not necessarily a point at which or something that's available to everyone, which is another good point that St. Francis de Sales makes in Introduction to Devout Life, is he says that devout life is available and possible for everyone, no matter your profession, no matter your vocation. It is not just for people living in monasteries, for cloistered nuns. It is not just for priests, not just for bishops. It is for all of us, for soldiers, for construction workers, for nurses, for people in sales, you name it. It's for everyone. The devout life takes different forms and shapes, but it's for everyone. And a life of prayer is also for everyone. Nobody's called to never pray. And there's never been a saint that didn't have a very, very, very strong prayer life. So if you have the hope of becoming a saint, you have to develop this strong prayer life. There's just no way about it. But the thing that we talked to Father about, I said, do you think there's ever a point where if you don't pray, it's a sin? And what I think, this is just Nathan's opinion on this, I think he was right. I don't think that necessarily not praying is a sin. I think that all of the other sins you're dealing with when you go to confession often are a result of you not praying. Now, you're never going to be perfect no matter how much you pray, but the most perfected people in human history, the saints, are the cloistered nuns and monks who literally spend like 18 hours a day in prayer. And so they get the closest to perfection as we have here on earth, you know, aside from Mary, who obviously spent a lot of very close, intimate time with the Lord. But you have these people that we see that the most perfect people pretty much ever are those who spend an immense amount of time in prayer. So prayer necessarily, it's not that not praying is a sin, it's that you can't avoid all the other sins without praying. And so it's more of like a foundation, almost on the outside of this, that is this foundation of any hope that you have towards living an actual holy life is only possible to the extent that you have a life of prayer. And so it's a very interesting thing, but you could say that it's, you know, it's kind of a causal relationship between not praying and sin. And so you could say that to not pray is a sin because it's going to lead you to sin. I think it is part of avoiding the near occasion of sin, which means avoiding temptations and just circumstances where you know you're likely or prone to fall into sin. I think that if you develop a life where you are not praying, that is basically that. And so you could argue that that's a sin. I'm not here to make a strong, you know, definitive statement on whether or not praying is or is not a sin. I think that you ought to pray every single day. I think scripture, the saints, the church is clear about that. And I think that the reason why is because you're not going to be holy at all if you just elect to not pray. And so that's huge. The other two things that I recommend you take a look at this Lent is, I've kind of already recommended this with some spiritual reading, but reading. I think I'm going to take this kind of mind, body, soul approach to what I recommend for Lent. As you know, I think the big three habits that we should have as people who are seeking excellence, if you are a serious listener to this podcast, you're not somebody that just comes along when I'm spilling hot takes, but you actually give a shit about being excellent and trying to take your life to the next level, which is what we're really about here. That's why I don't hone in on the hot topics on dating. I don't hone in on, you know, talking about self-fundraising or all these other things that get a lot of clicks, but don't actually go deep. And I mean, they do to an extent, I think, help people to live a more excellent life, but it's definitely not the central message of what seeking excellence is about. I want to return to these things. So if you're one of these people, then you know that reading, prayer, and exercise are the three most important things that we can do on a regular basis, right? Mostly daily, even if the exercise, sometimes it's just a walk, sometimes maybe it's just 100 push-ups, whatever, but some form of movement each and every day. And so reading is really important because it stimulates your mind. It helps your mind to expand and to grow. And when you have a sharp mind, virtue is easier. Doesn't mean that being a genius makes you easier to be holy, but I think that when you activate your mind, when your mind is not especially just dumbed down by constantly doom scrolling and the stupid ish we watch on TV and this dumb music we listen to nowadays and all these ridiculous things, right? Dumb conversations you're probably having with your friends. Maybe you're having good, enriching conversations, which is great. But if not, especially, you need to be reading. You need to be learning new things, expanding your mind. We know that people who seek excellence, we do not stop learning in high school when we graduate like the general population does. No more school, no more learning. I don't have to study anymore. Why would you want to stop studying? Why would you want to actively choose to be dumb, to be ignorant of so many things when there's so many good things worth knowing? You can't know them all. You shouldn't feel shame or guilt about all the things you don't know, but we should be striving to learn and to grow our knowledge and our education and what we know about the world, how the world works, how we can cultivate healthier mind, body, and souls. That's really, really important. So I think a good spiritual book is good. I think the other kind of tip that I would give you that kind of falls along these same lines is you want to be focusing on God throughout Lent. This is not a time to I bash fiction reading all the time, especially if you're not reading the classics and you're just reading stupid stuff like Harry Potter. But aside from that, this is definitely not the time for Harry Potter. If there is any time to listen to me and agree that there is, you should focus on reading things that are actually helping you to grow, specifically things that are helping you grow closer to God, this is the time to do it. Make Lent about your relationship with Jesus, not about anything else. Doesn't mean you can't have fun. Doesn't mean you can't watch March Madness. I'm going to be watching March Madness for sure. not giving up TV for all of Lent. We are reducing TV for Lent, but not giving it up totally. But these are just some ideas, some things you can think about is read this Lent. If reading is hard for you, all the better. Spend some time doing it before bed. 30 minutes before bed. You shouldn't be on your phone or watching TV anyways. So turn the screens off. Pick up a book. If it puts you to sleep, great. That's the time to read then, right before bed. If you want to actually learn something, read in the morning. Wake up 30 minutes earlier. These are great practices you can put into place that'll help you grow closer to God and be the saint that He created you to be. The third thing, you've guessed it, is some sort of body goal, right? And so for me, I always love Lent because I usually lose a couple pounds, which is great. And so the body aspect of Lent can be different things, right? Obviously, we're called to prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. So fasting is a physical thing. Choosing to fast from foods that you really like, foods that you know are unhealthy for you. So cutting out bad things from your life, this is a great time to do it. There's extra graces during Lent. And so you have the grace to cut out your creamer and your coffee. Let's say you're drinking sugar coffee every morning. Cut that out. Cut out desserts during the week. Cut out alcohol during the week. Cut out some of these things that you just don't need. And you've been kind of indulging in for a while. And you need a good reason to give it up for a little bit and experience life without it. This is the time to do that. Also, if you've been slacking, let's say your diet's decent, but you never exercise, do the things you don't like doing. Lent is a time to suffer and to deal with it and to face your fears and face your discomforts and face the things that you've been avoiding for far too long. And so I encourage you to think about that this Lent. Nobody ever talks about that. Nobody ever talks about how you can go to the gym for Lent or you can walk a mile every day. I know the Living Person used to do this every day in May, right? A mile a day in May. And you can do that during Lent. Say, I'm going to run a mile or walk a mile every single day. It takes like 15 minutes. And so, I mean, if you run it, you can do it even faster than that, right? 15 to 20 minutes a day. You can pray your rosary on it. Even better idea. But you're going to walk, whether it's cold or whether it's hot. You're not going to be soft and be like, I can't spend 20 minutes in the cold. Sure, if it's icy or snowy or whatever, be reasonable. Maybe you go to the gym and do it on the treadmill. But be mindful of that. What can you do with your body? How can you discipline your body? Obviously, some people are going to take cold showers. Shout out to the homies who are doing Exodus 90 right now. You guys are nuts. I've done it before, but I'm very glad that I'm not taking cold showers right now. Obviously, people are doing cold plunges and all kinds of crazy stuff. But what can you do physically to be even better this Lent? What can you do that will allow you to help? For some of you, maybe it's not wearing makeup. Maybe you've got some issue with, you know, just being self-conscious and being too vain when it comes to makeup. Or even just one day a week not wearing makeup. Maybe it's dressing nicer. Maybe you work from home and you've just been a bum like I was for so long and you just dress like a homeless person. If you're watching on YouTube today, you can see that I'm dressed like an adult human male, which is great. I started doing this more recently and I feel great about it. I love getting dressed and getting nice. And Emily's kind of shocked still in the mornings. And she's like, wow, you look really nice today. And I'm like, thank you. That means a lot. I think I look better on my Zoom calls. I feel more confident. I feel more professional. It just helps me to really, set my day up for success. So maybe that should be what you do and what you focus on as well. But I would pick a mind, body, and soul goal. Pick what book you're going to read this Lent. Pick your prayer goals and what you're going to stick to. Maybe it's a weekly holy hour. Maybe it's going back to confession. And if you're not praying for at least 15 minutes a day, that should be it. That should be your number one priority for Lent. And then your body goal. What are you going to do? What are you going to give up fasting wise? Are you going to dress more nicely each day? Are you going to dress nicer for mass? Are you going to do your hair? I don't know. Whatever it is for you, that could be a little extra sacrifice that you give towards presenting yourself to the world and disciplining your body and getting up earlier, whatever it might be, that allows you to become a better version of yourself. That's what Lent is all about. I get very excited for it. I want to make a final plug. If you want to join us for book club on Seeking Excellence, on our Locals channel, you can. It's not too late. SeekingExcellence.locals.com. You join as a $10 or $20 supporter each month or more. You're going to get a free copy of the book. If you join at the $10 level, if you join at $20 or more, you'll get a free book and a t-shirt. If you join like the $50 level, you'll get a free crew neck or polo and the book. And so I really love the new crew necks. They're really, really sweet. So I want to see everybody rocking some Seeking Excellence swag. So if you're interested in that, hit me up. You can shoot me a message on Locals, shoot me a message on Instagram. You can follow me there at Nathan Crankfield. I've been posting a ton. I'm going to be posting all spiritual content throughout Lent. I'm not going to be focused on anything else. Not going to be roasting people. Not going to be making, you know, reaction videos. None of that stuff. It's going to be all spiritual. We're locked in. We're going to be working towards becoming saints. And if you join us on Locals or if you continue to listen to the podcast, I promise you, you're going to go closer to God. If you continue to listen, you continue to pray, and you put into action what we talk about. None of this matters if you just listen to it and you don't make any changes, don't do anything differently in your life. You have to actually sit down, think about these things, pray about them, and implement them into your daily life. I believe in you. I know that you can do it. I hope that this Lent is the most fruitful one you've ever had. God bless you. Be your best.